Welcome to Off the Record with Lehigh Valley with Love. I am your co-host, George Wacker, with my co-host and Northampton County Commissioner, Jeff Warren. And today we're talking about the state of healthcare in our community. We have some great guests. We're going to introduce themselves, but we have State Representative Mike Schlossberg is here, along with DJ Diana, a nurse at St. Luke's, and Ali Glaser, a cancer survivor. So I just want to say thank you to all of you for being on the show. And Jeff, welcome back. We haven't done one of these in a little bit.
It's been a bit, my friend. It's great to be able to come on and talk about such an important issue as it pertains to healthcare. Look, we're not going to be solving the world's problems as it pertains to healthcare, but I think everybody on this podcast here this week is really going to be able to give some insights as to what is happening within the world of healthcare. Appreciate you, George, and let's get into this here. I think you wanted to talk to Representative Schlossberg right off the bat and, with some questions here.
Yeah, I want to grill him. No, Mike is a supporter, and he's always been fighting for us in Harrisburg. And that's what I want to talk about. You know, like, I'm a small business owner. Oh, my goodness. When I had to do my health care this year, along with many other people, it was crazy. So in Harrisburg, you know, give us something. You know, tell us what's going on there. Have you seen anything making a meaningful dent? And can you kind of talk about the state of affordable health care now?
So one of the greatest challenges, candidly, that I have in my job is while there is always levers we can pull, we don't have the control or the influence that the federal government does. So as they continue to screw around with Obamacare, our constituents will still suffer. Now, the good news and the bad news is that we have tried to stabilize the Obamacare market to the extent that we can by passing multiple pieces of legislation that would enshrine some of the Obamacare protections into law. That means things like making sure you can't get kicked off of your parents' health insurance until you're 26, not making sure that insurance companies don't have the ability to raise insurance rates for people who suffer from pre-existing conditions. The challenge, of course, is while it made it through the state house in a bipartisan manner, it then went to the state Senate where it's dead because the Republicans who control it don't want to actually move the legislation. And I don't like being that partisan, but everything that I just said is true. So until the Republicans that control the state Senate decide they actually want to move this legislation, it's not going anywhere. And I know if it did, it would get to the governor's desk and he would probably sign it into law faster than I can count to 10. But the political reality is that we can't get anything really good through on insurance in the current state of affairs unless we can get our Republican friends in the Senate to agree with us. And that's challenging, to put it politely.
It's very challenging, and that's why elections are important at the end of the day, yes, George. Like, yeah, and Mike, you know, and to everybody on this, right, on this podcast. That's why elections are important.
Yes, sir.
Right, and I think the way, right, that you make some of this change is by listening to some of the stories that we're going to be listening to.
Jeff. Yeah, absolutely. And this question is for you, DJ. You know, being a nurse within the St. Luke's University Health Network, you've been on the front lines within the nursing industry, and you're truly helping patients every single day in some way, shape, or form. You know, I want to get into, you know, whether it's staffing shortages that affect patient care or the pressures that healthcare workers face day in and day out. What is something that could dramatically improve patient outcomes that you have seen up close and personal as a nurse for so many years?
Well, you know, I'm always an advocate for nursing and nursing education. Right now, I am a clinical education specialist at St. Luke's. I've been an oncology nurse for 31 years, so I see everything through my oncology lens.
Yeah.
I've also been outpatient most of that time, so I also see it through an outpatient lens versus an inpatient lens. But honestly, truthfully, one of the best things we can do to affect patient outcomes, to affect people's outcomes, is prevention and screening.
Yeah.
So one third of cancer deaths could have been prevented. One third, a total, you know, 1/3%, 33% could have been prevented with better prevention and screening. So we're working towards that. But we have to get people earlier. We have to get the education out there for patients, for people to, you know, prevent cancer by eating right, by not smoking, by wearing their sunscreen, all those things. And we also have to have them able to have access to the early screening. So St. Luke's does a great job with their lung cancer screenings. It's low-dose CT screenings every year for the people who fit the parameters. I believe the parameters are, and don't quote me, but I believe the parameters are anywhere from ages 50 to 80, current smoker, not having quit smoking in the last 15 years. Yeah. So all of those people can get preventative screenings. So I think that is huge. That way we prevent a lot of this other stuff. We prevent people having to get the expensive treatments and the expensive surgeries and the exciting and fancy and progressive treatments that cost everybody a fortune.
And at the end of the day, too, that helps to control health insurance costs, if I'm not mistaken, correct? And Mike, you may see this as well, you know, in terms of what DJ is talking about. If preventative care continued down the path that we hope it would and that it should, it might make things a little easier for policymakers as well, correct?
Absolutely. It's one of the reasons we're constantly trying to get preventative care out there and reduce insurance barriers to it. We've done that selectively with certain diseases. I would argue we need to do a much better job of doing so and making it easier for people to get access to care, thus ultimately, frankly, saving their own lives.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, George, I know you wanted to talk to Allie as well here.
Well, I want to bring Allie into the conversation. Allie, thank you so much for joining us. Last but certainly not least,
appreciate it, guys.
You're a breast cancer survivor. I wanted you to kind of talk a little bit about that experience and maybe, you know, bring some enlightenment. What is something that is not talked about enough about breast cancer, your treatment?
Yeah, so I'm a 12-year survivor. We're all considered survivors from the moment we're diagnosed to the moment we die. We're a survivor. But as you can imagine, the whole process is completely overwhelming. It's really like being dropped into a storm without a map. 1 year leading up to my diagnosis, I became a full-time caregiver to my husband. He has progressive MS. He has now progressed where he's bedridden. He's a quadriplegic, still full-time caregiver hat. So rolling into my diagnosis, I thought, my God, who's going to take care of me? Right? Like, this is crazy. And so I got my diagnosis, no family history, everything, going through all the checks, the balances, the mammograms, nothing to see. And then 6 months after a clear mammo, something popped up. St. Luke's caught by accident, saved my life. Diagnosed with an aggressive stage 2. And decided, you know what, I can't really stress my husband out. I need to put my blinders on. I need to put my head down and just get through these treatments. 16 hard chemos I had to go through for the length of 5 months. It took a whole year. I had a hysterectomy, the whole gamut, radiation, 33 radiations. But it wasn't until I rang the bell at chemo at the end of 5 months. And I walked out into the waiting room and I made eye contact with a woman who was bald, had a scarf on. And I looked at her and I thought, God, I know where she's at. And I went over and I said, you know what, you can do this. And we exchanged numbers and it was like a magic that happened. It's so hard to explain, but when cancer people can connect with other cancer people, there's a deeper conversation that happens and a magic. Because now we can talk about things that just normal conversations you don't have with the nurse navigators or the doctors. And so that's where my advocacy, I have a nonprofit, Life Always Facing Forward, LAF, and we mentor patients and we get together. And that's the biggest piece I believe that is missing, is that connection up front. I didn't know how much I needed to unpack until I talked to her. And I am an advocate for that, hardcore.
It's really amazing to me when I hear all three perspectives, whether it's the legislative perspective, the nursing perspective, Allie, you being a cancer survivor perspective. At the end of the day, the foundation is hope. And that's what I'm hearing thus far in this, you know, 10-minute conversation that we've had, this short conversation. Allie, the hope that you have in terms of being a survivor, the hope, DJ, that you have in terms of the care that you are able to provide, and Representative Schlossberg, the hope that you have in terms of being able to implement policies.
I've been kind of depressing so far on this call, but that's a different story.
But there is a hope.
It's reality.
We are going to be able to progress in the future.
Absolutely.
In terms of policy making so that more folks can have access to affordable healthcare. And it really goes, yeah. Representative Schlossberg, you know, to what you were saying before, you know, the federal government certainly is failing in certain ways. There's no denying that now more than ever, there are individuals in our communities and throughout Pennsylvania who've lost their healthcare coverage, yep. under Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act, as you mentioned earlier, people being forced to make some terrible decisions when it comes to their life and how that correlates with their healthcare. And I got to say, like, I was actually just taken aback this past week. It was Sunday. I was watching 60 Minutes, and they had a segment about RAM, the pop-up RAMs, the return to remote area medical access. And it was such an inspiration to see this group of individuals putting these pop-up tents all over the United States. I think they went from like 12 pop-ups in terms of providing free medical care to now they're doing close to, I think, 30 or 40 throughout the course of a year now. And while the stories are sad, there is hope that somehow it's going to get better at some point down the road here. So I know you mentioned some stuff earlier, but the positive changes that you're really wanting to see in the future. I know for me, I'd love to see more emphasis on dental care. What are some of those positive changes that you really want to see folks being able to really grasp in terms of affordable healthcare in the future, Representative Schlossberg?
I think it's something that was mentioned earlier in this phone call, which is the importance of preventative care. And I mean preventative care in a few ways. First of all, you know, from a medical perspective, the obvious, having access to the diagnostic and screening tool that'll let you know when you have a problem and give you the tools that you need to address that problem before it becomes something severe and chronic that's not only ruins your life, but massively drains society's very limited resources, but also an increasing emphasis on health education. There's a bit of an irony here, and it actually drives me more than a little bit nuts, which is that the whole Robert Kennedy Jr. Make America Healthy Again movement, like, it's based in really good principles, which is this idea,
yes.
that what we eat and the air we breathe and the water we drink can have a massive impact on our society. The problem, of course, is that these guys have taken it into a crackpot.
Right. Raw milk. Like, right.
Well, and they're right. Like, right. And raw milk is a great example. Let's drink raw milk. No, you dumbasses. It's filled with bacteria. What the fuck is wrong with you? Stop drinking raw milk.
We got F-bombs.
Yes. But it's tough.
Well, it's a little, I mean, the guy with the brain worm is telling me to drink raw things. No, I'll pass. Thank you.
Right.
So they've taken this idea, and one of the really damaging things about what they've done is they've taken this idea of eating healthy and taking care of yourself better and politicized it. And that's deeply problematic because I want all of my constituents to pay attention to what they eat, to pay attention to the air that they bring, to the water that they drink. And instead, we've got Mr. Brainworm, who loves talking about the cocaine that he did off of toilet seats, telling people not to get vaccinated. And I hate them all. And they're killing people, literally.
Hey. It's like a cabal of Republicans at the top, right? Like, at what point do we, like, I don't know. It's just silly that it really feels like it's held up by a handful of people when it's, you know, people who know some of the solutions here. Just give us an opportunity to do it.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. And I wish I had a halfway decent answer, but that is the world in which we live at the moment.
Yeah. But I want to talk about nurses, back to DJ. I know that, you know, nurses are frontline, and we use that term for a reason. And sometimes, you know, not given the respect they deserve. In fact, I think a lot of us... not given the respect they deserve. Can you talk about, you know, in your 30 years of nursing experience, there's a deep level of humanity in the work being done in our wonderful hospitals in the Lehigh Valley. And I know that it can be frustrating sometimes for people who are in there, but can you talk about it from your perspective as a nurse? You know, why do you continue to be a nurse? Why do you love your profession?
Well, I don't know what else I would do, number one, because I haven't been doing it so long. And it really is really the passion. And that's important to know, too, that, you know, nobody who goes into healthcare, into nursing, does it because of the money. I should say most people do not. The great majority do not, because we get decent money, but we don't get great money. But we do it because we want to help people. And I think that's the frustrating part, is talking about the raw milk, or the, you know, this little nugget of truth. Let's eat better. Let's have better accessible healthcare. That nugget of truth gets blown up, and then it erodes the trust in the system. Mm-hmm. So that's a big problem for us. And I think nurses are lucky that we are the most trusted profession, except for in 2001 when it was the firefighters with 9/11. Well, but we have been the most trusted profession. So that is very satisfying that we do have a great highway to affect what people know, what people believe, what people trust. So that is a huge part of why I do what I do. I've had a physician, a very good physician, tell one of my patients, here, take this antibiotic twice a day, every day for 7 days. And she looked at him like he had three heads. And I said, oh, he had to take this medication twice a day, every day for 7 days. She said, oh, okay. So as nurses, we have that absolute connection with our patients that they have the trust and with us. And that's why I keep doing what I'm doing, because ultimately I am there to protect my patients, to educate my patients, to empower my patients to have live the best life they can. And you don't forget, I work with cancer patients. And I still want to do all those things for people with a disease that is a very scary disease. And over the last 30 years, I've seen a million changes. Allie, 12, what did you say, Allie? 12, 13 years that you've been?
12 years, yeah.
12 years. So yeah, that's a big strain on the system. But now we've got success, and we've got people living longer and people living outside of their diagnosis, which is where we want them to, where we want to support them to live.
It really
it's got to be tough, just like because you're in a system that is imperfect, but you're trying to do the best that you can. So I'm sure that's frustrating as well. Right. Yeah. And
chemotherapy, perfection is expected with chemotherapy. So that's a big pressure on the nurses.
Right.
And that's the ones that administer it.
It's an incredible foundational piece of where humanity is within the healthcare system. And it lies within our nurses. So I want to thank you for that, DJ, and all your colleagues in the nursing profession, because it's again, the humanity of it, I think sometimes gets lost within this state of healthcare that we're talking about, but our nurses are right there on the front lines, and you all embody that. So to close us out here, Allie, I want to bring it on home with you here, because I know all of us probably on this podcast here have had a number of friends and family who have gone through cancer. They've had treatments. Some have beat it. Some have not. Everyone goes through their own experiences, and you were talking about your own experiences earlier. If you could, and the final question here is, if you could redesign one aspect of the patient experience, what would that actually be?
If I can redesign it, I would connect. There need be something in place to connect that emotional gap when you get diagnosed. It is so blatantly overwhelming. You get handed stacks of stuff and you just push it aside. Denise, you know, she was one of my infusion nurses. She was the one who empowered and got me through and infused me with hope and positivity. And so kudos to her, because she really laid the foundation of how to go about winning, right? Like to how to try and beat this. And so it's that culture, and it's created with these nurses on the front line. You know, I work hard to try and connect patients right away at diagnosis. So if that's really something that I would change when you're newly diagnosed and you're navigating this process, is cancer people need other cancer people, whether you think you do or you don't, you do. And that's what I'd like to punch. That's where the gap is between that diagnosis and then you leaving and just wanting to just walk out into traffic because your head is spinning. That's an important piece, and it's a hill that I'm going to die on. And Denise will tell you it's there's a gap. That's where we lose the hope and positivity, and we're here to infuse those people with it.
To put them
on the right path and empower them.
It's really,
I think it's so easy to talk. It's so easy to talk about numbers, right? But it's people. Those numbers are people.
They're people.
You know, we forget about them.
Absolutely. Yeah. George, I don't know about you, buddy, but like there's positive stuff that's going on in the state of healthcare, but we still have to get better at the end of the day too, you know?
Right. Yep. We got to get these five guys in Harrisburg and find out where they hang out for lunch. And go. No, I, We got to be like, I said frontline for Diana, but I mean frontline for everybody here in their different respective ways. Where, you know, Representative Schlossberg is out there on the front line fighting for legislation change. Allie fighting for people you haven't met yet, which is amazing. And of course, DJ every day going in there and being a nurse is phenomenal. I'm lucky I get to talk to you guys and you took some time to talk to us. I really appreciate
it. Yes, we're so fortunate. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Happy to do
Thank
it.
You
Thanks,
guys.
Allie. Thanks, Allie.
And one more time, Allie. Can you tell us one more time about your the LAAF organization? I just want to make sure people can find it.
Sure. It's LAAF, L-A-F-F, four, hope.org. That's our website. It's about hope and positivity. We have a safe social media space for just cancer patients where we empower, infuse them with the hope and positivity, and we pay it forward. We are all about surprise blessing cancer patients. That's how we use our money. Primarily, it's at Christmas time where we give the social workers and the nurse navigators $100 Walmart gift cards to just bless somebody in that infusion chair, because the last thing somebody going through infusion at Christmas time is going to think about is buying themselves a gift.
Right.
And here we are saying, here's $100 from your people. You're seen and you're heard and we know where you're at. And this is just a surprise blessing. And
awesome.
It's that kindness that will build. And that's what we're rolling out. And it's all good stuff.
Awesome.
Alec, well, you mentioned about health and access to good, healthy things. If you're still there, can you mention about the with the organic farm? And if she's not there, I can mention it.
I think she may have left, but talk about that.
So LAAF also sponsors shares to St. Luke's Rodale Organic Farm. And Allie and her compadres are out in the morning, literally across the street from me at Anderson campus, harvesting organic farm vegetables. She brings That's them great. To me and to my colleague. We take them on a cart and we distribute them in real time to patients sitting in the chemo chairs. That's and awesome. Their faces light up. They're like, what do you mean this is for me? I've got tomatoes. I've got whatever we have that day. It all depends on what's being harvested that day. It literally goes from the organic farm through the hands of our LAAF people and out to our patients same day.
Fantastic.
Talk about. We'll be sure. Yeah. We're going to link to them in the show notes for anybody who wants to find out more. I think Allie got a phone call. That's why I kicked her off the show. But the great thing is we were finished anyway. So we'll email her and thank her. And I want to thank Mike, DJ,
always Allie, guys
for coming on the show. And Jeff,
thank you're the you best. All. Yes, you are the best.
We'll see
too,
you guys
George.
Next time.
Take care, guys.
Thank you, guys. Have a good afternoon.